You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com, bringing you the freshest radio in Brooklyn since 2009. Hear directly from chefs to farmers, artists to architects, authors to brewers, and everyone in between. Check out all of our shows on our website or by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. The following program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery. Cane Vineyard and Winery supports Heritage Radio and the growing movement to change how Americans eat and how we think about our planet. For more information, visit www.cane5.com.
Listening to Heritage Radio Network. Welcome to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host. And we have a special show tonight because later on in the show, I'll be having two guests. I never, ever, rarely have guests on my show. And the second half tonight, we're going to have on my buddies from the Heritage Radio show, We Dig Plants, Alice, Marcus Krieg, and Carmen DeVito. So that's something to be excited about. So that's later on in the show. So last week and on many shows before, I rambled on about thriftiness, not wasting. You know, my favorite topic, basically. One of my favorite topics. And here I am again, but I promise I won't. The whole show won't be about that. It's just something I think about, and I think about it more and more right now, and I can't emphasize it enough when I'm teaching. You know, I teach in a culinary school, and I'm trying to like pound it into them not to be wasteful, because they're kind of, you know, the students are sort of in this luxury environment right now of school where things are plentiful and they don't really have to worry about food cost. And when they get out there into the real world, into real kitchens, there's, you know, there is none of that. You don't take that half a leftover diced onion and throw it out. You save it and you use it for something. And I was really thinking about it today because, you know, basically now we're on like the total brink of like complete economic collapse in the country and the world. Although apparently the market went back up somewhat today. But, you know, maybe it's really time for us all to start thinking more like our grandparents, or in some case our great grandparents did, and sort of just be aware of how much waste we're creating and how we can change that a little bit. So just these things keep coming up for me at work where I find these ways to use things and, you know, to sort of drive that lesson home. And a couple days ago we were doing a class where we were using poussins. Now poussins are just little baby chickens. Just little teeny weeny baby chickens, you know, past the fuzzy yellow chick stage, but not too much past that. Smaller than a Cornish hen, which is just a baby chicken also, by the way. There's nothing, you know, they're not from Cornwall. They're not Cornish. They're just little chickens. But poussins are even smaller. They're just baby chickens with snooty French names, so you can charge more for them. But they're cute. And we were going to be splitting them in half and grilling them. But when you do that, because these birds are pretty little, if you leave the wings on the first two joints of the wing, they tend to burn. So I told the students to cut off the wings, the wing tip and the middle wing joint. And so normally, you know, in a restaurant situation, I would just take those and I would throw them in with the bones for the chicken stock. But we don't really work that way. At school, we don't sort of cumulatively, well, sometimes we cumulatively save that stuff up, but you know, so when the student said, "Chef, what do we do with the wings?" instead of just throwing them out, which most of them did, and I made a joke about, "Oh, let's make little teeny weeny hot wings." And so he said, "Okay," this guy's a great student, and he totally took up the challenge, and he took the little teeny tiny wings and he made little teeny tiny hot winglets. And they were, like, adorable. They were, like, hot wings for elves. Like, just scaled down, so cute. Because, you know, anything, if you miniaturize it, just becomes that much more charming and adorable. And chicken wings are no exception. You shrink them down. And I thought, like, if you were serving a multi-course menu, or you wanted to do like a little canapé or a little amuse-bouche, it would be sort of funny to bring out a plate with a couple of these little mini wings with a teeny little ramekin of buffalo sauce and, you know, something like that. It'd be really cute. Anyway, the students, of course, thought it was totally cool because we used the wings. You know, they're chickens, but they didn't think you could use anything but a regular chicken wing. They don't think so creatively sometimes. But yeah, I thought it was a very good lesson on thrift, nonetheless. And a while ago, maybe like a year ago, I did a show all about wings. And I talked about how there's actually a chicken wing shortage because there are fast food places and restaurants now that are just serving chicken wings, and there just aren't enough wings. There's only two wings per chicken. So we're running out of wings. And I was talking about the show how you could use alternatives like frog's legs or rabbit front legs instead of chicken wings. But, you know, there's ways of getting value and profit out of all sorts of things. And normally you would just not even think about it, chuck that stuff in a stock pot. But why not make a little fancy pants canapé out of it? Anyway, I hope they're getting the message. When they go out into the world and they become cooks and chefs, it's up to them to continue the Chef Smarty Pants thriftiness campaign and make me proud. And so, you know, as we're faced with this meltdown around us and the world is rapidly going to hell faster than it has been, you know, I still have obligations and responsibilities that I need to attend to, like all of us. We can't just let it all go. And so I had to take care of my bees. Speaking of thrifty, we could learn a lot from bees. So, you know, I have this hive. I'm a beekeeper. And I used to keep my hives here at Roberta's, which is where I'm broadcasting right now from, here in Bushwick. But the bees had to move this spring to Crown Heights, different part of Brooklyn, because they couldn't afford the rent anymore in Bushwick because all these hipster bees moved in with like their skinny jeans and their irony, and my poor bees just couldn't afford it anymore, so they got pushed out. They had to go live in Crown Heights. That's actually not the case. They had to move because we couldn't get access to the roof anymore, and it's hard to be a beekeeper if you have to climb a ladder. So now my bees live on top of a building in Crown Heights, and they have been very productive this season. It's been a very good year for bees, and they've produced honey. It always kind of takes me by surprise. That's what they do. They produce honey, and then like there's honey. They're the most kind of economical, productive, amazing little communities, beehives. If you've never experienced one, you should find someone who has one and spend some time with them. So I put the honey shallow on maybe, I don't know, 6 weeks ago. And it's full. Completely full. Like chock full of honey. So I took it off yesterday and it's time to harvest some honey. And I put a second honey shallow on in anticipation of the late summer nectar flow. There's like two nectar flows. There's one that's like the early spring up to mid-July one. And then there's the September one. What we're in right now is called the dearth, which I think is actually kind of appropriate for considering. But hopefully I'll get another crop in September. So the honey shallow that I took off yesterday, which wasn't as easy as all the beekeeping books make it seem, by the way, it's just sitting in my apartment. I took the frames out and I wrapped them all up in plastic because I can't extract the honey from the hive yet. I could take the box off the hive, but the honey's still in the frames. And that's because I don't own my own extraction equipment. It's kind of big and expensive, and I didn't really want to make that investment because, you know, space and money. And I've had other people say to me, oh, don't buy your own extraction equipment. You can just use mine or so-and-so's or whatever. So I joined the New York City Beekeepers Meetup, and they have these like group extractions, and so I'm waiting for them to contact me and say, okay, we're harvesting today. But if you know anyone who's a beekeeper who has that equipment who would like to show me how to do it or share it with me, That would be great. Just let me know. You can contact me on the Why We Cook Facebook page and let me know. But the sooner I harvest those frames, the better, because when you get the honey out of the frames, you put it back on the hive and then the bees fill it up. And not only do they fill it up, but after you extract your honey, the frames are really, really sticky. So you put them back on the hive and the bees, they just lick it clean. They are so organized and neat that you just put it back on and they just lick that honey right up. Like yesterday when we harvested, there were some drippy frames and we dripped honey on the roof. And when I went to wipe it up, there were already bees there just slurping it right back up. Amazing. We could learn a lot from them. So anyway, the bees live on top of a apartment building in Crown Heights. And the apartment building is where a friend of, well, she's not really a friend, somebody I know lives there. She's an employee of Alice and Carmen from We Dig Plants, because they have a company called Groundworks Gardens. And this woman is their gardener. And she had said, oh, you can put your bees on top of my roof because we have a garden up there and we want bees up there and that'll be great. And I thought, now that is like a perfect situation of cooperation and sharing. It's very bee-like. And also her landlord wants to be a beekeeper too, and the landlord wants to get a hive next year. So it all works out great because I can keep my bees up there and everybody's happy. And when I harvest honey, I give them honey, and then the landlord will get her hive and I'll show her what to do. And see, we can all get along and share and work together and be thrifty and economical and productive. And nobody is going to downgrade my honey from its AAA rating. There's no honeybee tea party bossing my bees around, okay? And if we do face total economic collapse this year, I can use my honey as a barter commodity, you know, for things like whale oil and salt and deer hides. You know, when the grid goes down completely, when the whole thing just melts down and we're living like it's the 1860s, I'll be okay because I will have my honey as a commodity. So it's a good thing that when I was a kid, I obsessively read the Little House on the Prairie books, because now I actually feel really well prepared to live in the 1860s. I know what to do when the locusts and the grasshoppers come and eat the whole wheat crop, or when Pa shoots the bear. I know what to do with the bladder of the bear. I know what to do with the bear fat because I read and I studied up on all this. So in anticipation of returning to pre-industrialized times, which I think is almost inevitable, I got up really, really early this morning to do some cooking. I thought, while I still have access to a gas stove and electricity, I'm going to do some cooking so I can put stuff away and plan in advance. Now, there are times when the only chance I have to do something like cook is early in the morning because I work nights often. And that's okay, because then it's not so hot in my apartment and, you know, it's better. So I've been doing my usual scavenging at work. You know, I've told you about how there's always kind of random stuff left around, and I scavenge. And, oh, that's weird. I just saw an old employer of mine walk out the door. Huh. That was interesting. Anyway, so I've been scavenging. And I got some really good stuff the past few days because there's a class across the hall from mine and a class down the hall from mine who are both just starting the program. They're in the early days, and that means all they're doing is knife skills. So they're just pumping out loads and loads and loads of cut vegetables. And most of that stuff just gets like bagged up and sent off to City Harvest or used up as stock. So I feel completely justified stealing from the poor, basically. So instead of it going to City Harvest, it goes to me. So I got a quart of very finely minced shallots and a big, huge bag of very finely shredded red and green cabbage and 3 quarts of small diced tomatoes a couple days ago. So this morning I got up and I turned the tomatoes into tomato jam. I made it with a lot of those shallots, and then I used some anchovy paste in there and red wine vinegar and some of my own honey. Well, my bee's honey, not my honey. And some ginger. What else did I put in there? Some cloves. And I just cooked it down, 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 down till it got really thick and sticky. You want to cook tomatoes in this form out until all the water is gone and they start to get thick and darken and caramelize, because that's the flavor you're looking for. Now, this is something that you could actually take and then, you know, put up. You could put it in jars and can it, and that would get you through at least probably the first year of the apocalypse. I'm just going to keep it in the fridge for now. I'm holding out hope that it won't have to go that far, but you could certainly can it, and it's very high in acids. You don't have to worry. You won't get botulism, all of that. And we really like to eat this tomato jam in my house. I made some last week too, and it's really good on things like grilled fish or on tacos, or it's really good with eggs. And then I turned that big, giant bag of shredded cabbage into a slaw. I live in a slaw-loving house with a slaw-loving spouse. That man eats slaw like potato chips. And so a good slaw on a hot day is like a perfect thing. So I turn that leftover cabbage into a nice crunchy slaw. I use some of those shallots. I use some rice vinegar, some honey. What else did I put in there? That was probably it. Some salt, of course. But, you know, cabbage, very underrated. I have talked about this before, too. Seriously, if we are facing economic Armageddon, you better get to know how to work with cabbage and make cabbage your best friend, because cabbage is what poor people eat, and we are poor now. So we're going to take a very quick break, and when we come back, we're going to have with us Alice and Carmen from We Dig Plants. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host. Remember that if you're a fan of Why We Cook, you can find us on Facebook. Just search for Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. You can also follow me on Twitter at Chef Smarty Pants. And, of course, you can listen to any Heritage Radio show ever made on iTunes. And you can also listen live or archived on our website at any time. Not only can you listen to my show, but there are also many other fantastic shows, such as We Dig Plants, hosted by the lovely Alice Marcus Krieg and Carmen DeVito, who happen to be here with us on the show tonight. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Erica. It's awesome to be a guest for a change.
Yeah. I know. It's so exciting. I was a guest on your show a few weeks ago, yep, talking about peaches, and now I have you on mine. It's so cool.
It's fun to share.
It's fun to share. And especially in these hard times, it's very important.
Absolutely.
That's what I was saying earlier about my bees and about working cooperatively and helping each other out. So you guys know that I have this little bungalow up there in tiny bungalow land, right? I've told you about it.
Yes, right. Yes. Right. We have to come up there and take a look.
You do, because we really need help. Because last summer, you know, or last fall, we built this community garden. So it's basically like the size of a tennis court. And, you know, we built these boxes and everything, and everybody's been growing. But I think we have some problems with our dirt. So I should give you guys some dirt to analyze. Maybe tell me what's wrong with it. So we got this mix. We had it delivered. It was like, I don't know, half dirt and half organic compost. And we mixed that together. And we put that in the boxes. And everybody was happy. And I bought a bag of manure and mixed that in, because that seemed like a good idea.
Right.
And I planted all my stuff. And we have a drip irrigation system. But I don't know. Things are good. But stuff's not growing that well. So I thought...
What? Tell me, what specific problems are you having, or with specific crops?
Well, like, I planted Swiss chard, and I started the chard early in the season. You know, I bought seeds, and I started in, like, a little seed flat thing at home, and they grew perfectly well. And then I put them in the ground, and the chard never got beyond about, I don't know, 8 inches. Like, it just doesn't seem to be thriving, and it's not getting any bigger.
When did you put them in the ground?
In April? I thought maybe I put them in too early. Could that
have happened? Yeah, I mean, they are cold season crops.
Yeah.
So they do like to be put out early. And then once it starts getting warm, they start bolting, which is basically,
right. But they didn't bolt.
But they're not even... So something is happening in that soil. Something is preventing it from growing. And it's obviously you have irrigation, so it's probably not a water issue.
Yeah.
Sometimes plants just stop when it gets too hot. And we've had a really brutal summer.
We have. Right. And that's what
we
I was thinking.
We had a hot spell in April, too.
That's so true. Early on, we had a hot spell.
Yeah,
actually,
in June. Early June.
Some of the early lettuce we put in bolted months
quickly.
Ago. Yeah.
Right.
Right. So we had that problem. Okay. So it could be that. Yeah. So I'm having some problems with the chard, and I planted green beans. Like, I got seeds from the Hudson Valley Seed Library because I love
yeah,
them.
Yeah.
Right?
Love yeah. Great.
Yeah. And so
great
they,
company.
I got their... mixed chard and I got the green beans and I put the green beans. I started those same thing, you know, started them in a flat, put them in and the plants grew and everything was fine. And I got like a little crop of green beans, like a little handful about 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of like nothing else. And then the second little batch started to grow, but they're tiny. They're like tiny, tiny Harry Colbert and nothing has gotten bigger.
Wow,
I know.
That's really strange.
I know.
Because beans are usually one of the easiest things to grow.
I know. I remember as a kid growing beans, and it was a cinch.
Right, and you can't stop them once they start.
Right.
Yeah.
And
all I could think of is it also could be a drainage issue. I mean, sometimes, you know, the soil is too heavy, and they can't, you know, the leaf production, and of course, fruit and flower production, which, you know, and the seed production, which the beans are, you know, require really good root systems to take up the nutrients and the water. So do you see standing pools of water in the beds
no.
at all?
Uh-uh. Not at all. No. You'll have to come up and take a look.
Yeah.
Is it like it's a raised bed or is
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's a raised
okay.
bed. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so it
should be a no-brainer.
Soil.
Yeah, I think it's the soil. You'll have to come up. I think I need a house call.
Yeah.
Well, another thing I was thinking, although I don't think this is particular in your case because you got seeds from a very good, reliable
right.
source, but a lot of times seeds, if they're like last year's seeds, you know, they lose in
yeah.
percentage-wise
right.
the amount of yield that you're going to get.
Potency.
That actually just happened with us
uh-huh.
because we got some seeds, some corn, actually, but we bought them, like, you know, from Home Depot, and it was
right.
just this whimsical, like, hey, let's try this.
Let's grow corn.
yeah, and then it, you know, some of it has emerged, but it won't, like, go to tassel. So I think it's just, you know, we had some bad seeds.
Bad seed.
Yeah, so that's something to pay attention to as well.
Right.
Is the date on the package.
Right. Well, and, you know, I was all, like, smug because I got Hudson Valley Seed Library seeds, and I had, like, all these organic or, you know, heirloom varieties of things I was putting in. And everybody else, like, basically went to Home Depot, bought little vegetables, you know, little plants, stuck them in the ground.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And everybody has, you know, these huge tomatoes and all of this stuff. And I'm, like, sitting there feeling all smug with my... and beans and nothing's
well,
happening.
It is so much harder to grow from seed.
Yeah.
It's hard to grow vigorous seedlings. You know, you have to thin them properly. You
right.
have to space them properly. When you buy the plants, that's already been done for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, you just stick them in.
They've yeah, and you stick them in, and you know you have a much greater chance of success.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something really wonderful, especially in the winter, about starting your own seed.
I know that's why I did it because I love
yeah.
that. I love the process. I love that, you know, like in February, I grow these little seeds in my house, and it's so exciting, and it, you know, makes you not want to kill yourself in February.
Yeah, exactly.
So let me ask,
so Erica, you started both of these inside and then you transplanted them out,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Well, I have one suggestion for you. Both crops would probably do better starting directly outside but a little bit later, and
okay.
I'll tell you why. The beans are usually planted directly in the ground because they don't love to be moved.
Okay.
And And greens, you can sow them when the soil's a warmer temperature, like when the soil's like 50 degrees. Put that chard out.
Yeah.
And then thin it. You can even eat the little thinnings.
Right, I do.
And then I think you'll probably have better success.
All right.
In fact, you can start chard now for fall crop.
That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, and if you put it out now, it'll start, start germinating,
yeah.
And then, you know, by the time it's of a decent size, you start thinning it, and then it'll be cool weather, and then you'll have a good crop. And I bet you'll do better putting it directly in the ground. There are certain things that are smart to start indoors,
yeah.
And start, or like the tomatoes and the peppers and all
right.
those like really hot season crops.
Mm-hmm.
But the beans and the greens, I would put them right outside.
All right. Well, I was going to do that. I was actually this weekend going to pull up the chard and eat it and put in new stuff.
Because, yeah. In fact,
yeah,
you might even, if you cut the chard, you don't have to pull the whole thing up.
It may come back.
You can just cut and sort of, you know, cut a leaf or two at a time from different
right.
plants, like the outer leaves, and then the interior will continue to grow.
Yeah, that's what I had been doing, but they're so small that, you know, it's not enough.
Especially
if you cook it, then, you know, it wilts down and you get like a tablespoon
right.
of chard. But anyway, yeah.
What else are you growing?
Well, what else am I growing? So last fall, like around Thanksgiving, I got this variety of winter squash at the Grand Army Plaza Farmers Market. There's a woman there who sells all these crazy winter squashes, and I cannot remember the name of it. I wrote it down. It's some kind of Thai name.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like a Thai variety of hard-shelled squash. And it's kind of squat and warty looking. And I can't remember the name, but it was so delicious. I served it at Thanksgiving, and it was so great that I saved the seeds, and I dried them out, and I planted those.
Oh, and, how fun.
Yeah, and those are going nuts. Like,
I bet.
They're taking
over. Do you get a lot of flowers?
I got a lot of flowers on them.
Yeah,
yeah.
My mom has been growing winter squash, and she's been eating pounds of squash blossoms,
uh-huh.
you know. That's really good to eat.
Yeah. Well, those are doing great. I planted sunflowers. They're doing great, but you can't eat them, you know.
No.
And I have some okra, and that's doing okay. I like growing mm-hmm. okra. But, you know, there's not that much room in the box. But what I also have, and so this is what I wanted to ask you guys about, and, of course, we're mm-hmm. almost out of time here, is this is why I suspect there's a problem with the soil, because along with the box down in the community garden, up on my patio, I have this old bathtub. It's like an old clawfoot bathtub that I had found in the woods years ago. And we dragged mm-hmm. it back to the house, and I filled it up with, you know, commercial potting soil. And I grow arugula in there.
Mm-hmm.
And the arugula does great in there, and it's delicious, and it grows really fast, and it's, you know, beautiful. And I keep, like, wire mesh over it because the deer come around.
Oh, yeah.
It's like their salad bar.
It's like putting out a smorgasbord for them.
Yeah, it's like a salad bar for them. So those same arugula seeds that I grew in the tub, I also planted down in the community garden box, and the arugula came up completely different. It was smaller. It was like not great tasting. Totally
wow.
different yield. So I suspect we have a soil issue.
Yeah, we have to take your soil to Cornell and analyze it.
Right.
Yeah.
And then
to the extension agency.
Yeah, I should. You know what? They have an agent actually at the little farmer's market in that town, so
yeah,
I should.
Yeah, you could drop it off. Right.
They'll analyze and they'll tell you what deficiencies, and you can add those nutrients. You can add organic amendments.
Yeah.
Things like bone meal
right.
and other things in the fall so that your soil is prepped. But I suspect a lot of soils that aren't bagged or that are just, you know, compost is one thing, but some soils, you don't even know where it comes from.
Right.
Like, who knows where they
I know.
Dug it
some
from.
Some company
you know?
Delivered
and,
it. Right.
I mean, it could just be from a heap somewhere.
Could be from a landfill on
Staten
Island.
There's no
or
sort of real control when you're buying stuff bulk.
Yeah.
There's no, like, guidelines, like, for packaged soil. They have to list, like, what's in it and how much, you know,
right.
and where it's from.
Right.
But when it's bulk,
who knows?
You know, you think of soil. It's, you know, what kind of commodity is that? But
it,
you don't know what you're getting.
I know.
And
well,
do you amend that, the soil that's in the bathtub, do you amend it each spring with compost and manure?
No, usually I, you know, it just settles a lot during the winter, so I usually
right.
just buy another bag of,
and
like,
put it on top.
Potting
yeah.
mix and mix it on top. And it's full of earthworms, too. I don't know where they came from. It's like they're climbing
up. Oh, that's good.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's really wormy, so it's good. No, the bathtub's been a big success. The
Mariana Half Shell.
Exactly.
Arugula on a half shell.
It is. It's great. Actually, we were going to hook up like an old like shower fixture above the tub so that I could rain on it. Like I could water it from a shower, which I thought would be really sweet.
I love that, Eric.
I know. Awesome. I should post a picture of it. It's actually really cute.
Yeah, you should.
So we only have like 2 minutes left. What I wanted to really ask you guys is if people wanted to start gardening and grow their own vegetables, like what would you say in a box like that, ideally, you know, top five vegetables for a raised bed planter, if you could only grow, let's say, five things, what would be the most bang for your buck?
Well, beans and tomatoes and herbs, I think, yeah. Uh-huh. Are really, you know, those are my top three of things that I use a lot. And then eggplants. I'm a big eggplant eater. They don't take up a lot of space. Uh-huh. They don't get big. They do well with the herbs, and they produce a lot of vegetable matter, mm-hmm. you know, edible vegetable matter in the square foot, you know.
Right.
But like you, think seasonally.
Yeah.
And do several crops throughout the year.
Right. That's how I had sort of planned this all. I had this whole idea about my sugar snap peas and then my squash and staggering things around.
The other thing you just want to be cognizant of when you're planting is you want to plant like things together. That means with regard to water conditions.
Yeah.
You don't want to plant really dry things next to things that are water intensive.
Mm.
So rosemary and tomato, not a good combo.
Mm. Right, because rosemary is really like a almost Mediterranean desert kind of climate.
Dry. Yeah, right. Likes to be dry. And tomatoes need a lot of water.
Yeah, yeah. Well, actually, all my herbs, like all the piney kind of herbs and lavender and thyme and all that, I have growing just on the patio, you know, planted in the ground because the deer don't eat those.
Mm-hmm. I know. That's what's great about that.
I have so much thyme and lavender because I finally thought I had, you know, success and they won't eat it. Of course, you never know what they will and won't eat. So one of these days they could change their mind.
Depending on how bad the drought is, they will start eating all kinds of weird stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
One quick note that Carmen started doing in her garden, which is really, really beautiful to look at, but also extremely practical, is in her pots with her herbs, she uses gravel as a top mulch.
Oh.
And it keeps it nice and cool.
And
it
moist.
Keeps it neat, and it keeps the moisture down.
Ew.
And it's really beautiful looking.
Very smart,
and
Carmen.
Clean.
Thank you. It keeps it clean, too. Like when you water, I use my herbs constantly.
Right.
When I water, no soil splashes onto it. And also, it kind of mimics a mini Mediterranean gravelly environment, which is what they like, the rosemaries and the lavenders. So it's a great, nice way to grow for people who don't have a lot of space. Put them all in pots and top dress with any kind of gravel. You can even go to the pet store and get some aquarium gravel and go really funky with color, you know, if you want.
That's a good idea. I have gravel in my bee waterer. You know those like automatic pet waterers for when you go on vacation?
Right.
I have one of those for the bees to water them, and you have to put gravel in it because otherwise the bees will fall in and drown.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Kind of like bird baths for birds.
Yeah.
They won't go in ones that are too deep.
Right.
Right.
Bees don't swim. They drown.
It also keeps the water, you know, it filters out the water so that the sediment.
Right. Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yes. Anyway,
Good. Well,
unfortunately, we're out of time. That went so fast.
I know.
Very fast.
So much fun. Well, you'll have to come up. I'll talk to you, you know, after the show. We'll make a plan.
Okay. Well, thanks for having us on.
Thanks for coming
on. Fun,
sure. Okay.
Thank you, Erica.
Guys. Okay. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Well, we're just about out of time. So, thank you to Alice and Carmen, and thanks to Jack and Carlo in the control room, and we'll see you next week.
This is Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer. There's a lot of posturing and talking around raw milk these days and how great it is. But if you really want to get a full-on investigation into the pros and cons, the risks and benefits of raw milk consumption, here's a nifty website, www.realrawmilkfacts.com. FAQs.com. It has a laundry list of FAQs, along with information from studies and reports from American and European science communities. If you flirt with raw milk consumption, this is definitely worth taking a look at. This is Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer.
Every spring at the end of kidding season, goat dairies across the country are faced with the question of what to do with their male bucklings. Because on a dairy farm, there's no role for a male. Often the most economical thing for these farmers to do is to cull the animals at birth or ship them off to the commodity market. Heritage Foods USA is embarking on a new project, No Goat Left Behind, looking to step in and fill this niche by creating a marketplace for these male bucklings. Visit us at www.heritagefoodsusa.com to learn more and to reserve your goat this coming October.
New York Night Train, Summer Soul Shindig, Rockaway Beach Party, featuring the 45 RPM soul magic of DJ Jonathan Tobin. Saturday, August 20th, 6 to 9 at Rippers, Boardwalk 86. Free party!